what do you think about the transition between the older generation and the newer generation of farmers?
I think technology is going to be a big part of that story. If you think about farming, a lot of farming is learned. It's learned through trial and error. And like any business, you learn through iterations. When you look at a normal farm, there's maybe 50 chances you get to practice. Say you start farming when you're 20 years old and you quit farming when you're 70 years old. You get 50 chances to learn, 50 chances to improve, 50 chances to optimize. So really, there's not a lot of room for error there. You only get so many trips around the sun. So, you know, using technology to help bridge that knowledge gap faster, I think is super important.
Generally, there's a sort of romanticized and antiquated idea of what a farmer does. Like they're some sort of soil or cattle whisperer who drives a pickup truck with a couple of hound dogs riding shotgun. But in reality, farming is pretty high tech. And I'm thrilled to have Brett McClelland, Director of Technical Product Management at CNHI, which is Case New Holland Industrial. He's here to talk about how technology influences our agriculture. Brett, welcome to Life Meet Tech.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk about agriculture, farmers, technology, and how those all have intersected so much over the last several years.
Indeed, there is so much technology in agriculture. But for most of us, when we see ads on television, you find this old farmer who gets off the tractor and you see this golden field behind. But that is a caricature, is it not? I mean, that's not the way agriculture operates these days.
Yeah, I would say like a lot of things, there's some truth in that. But modern day farming is, a lot of it is very advanced from a technical perspective. It's really a big business, a very serious business with a lot of risk, a lot invested. And farmers are looking for really every opportunity they can to do more with less, to reduce that risk, and to make sure that they can create as much great food as they possibly can with the resources they put in. So tech has been a big game changer for them.
One interesting fact I learned was the history behind automation and how far back it goes in agriculture. Even as early as the 1930s in the World's Fair, they showcased all kinds of farm mechanical equipment, including milking machines, as well as radio-controlled tractors. Does that surprise you, or is there an ethos of embracing technology in farming and agriculture?
I think it's really a part of agriculture's DNA. People have been dreaming about technology and some of these opportunities for many, many years, like you said. I think a lot of what we're seeing today is not something that's never been thought of before, but we're super lucky to live in the time where it's now possible. You know, some of the technologies we've launched, like auto steering or yield monitoring, where you can measure the quality and the quantity of the crop. A lot of these technologies farmers have been wanting to do for a long time, but you know, there just really wasn't the technology or the tools to allow them to do it at scale. So really, we're all truly blessed to be able to work in the industry in the modern day and be able to bring some of these opportunities to light. So much has changed in technology, as you know, starting in the 90s when we really first got access to higher precision GPS. GPS was a game changer for farming. It allowed us to really precisely measure and map a lot of the work that the farmer is doing. From a record-keeping perspective, that helps them make better decisions all the way up until present day when we're automatically steering the machine, automatically changing settings, you know, lots of great things to help the farmer be more efficient. So a lot has changed for sure, but that has a pretty rich history going back a pretty long ways, as you mentioned.
Can you give a little bit more detail on GPS? GPS is the global positioning satellite. It's the same technology that we use in our phones. So when you have, let's say, a 1,000-acre farm, how exactly does GPS help with farming?
Yeah, and I can definitely try and paint that picture for you. I think the first thing to really think about is just the scale of farming. if you can imagine a 1,000-acre farm, that's hundreds and hundreds of times you have to travel back and forth down the field. So you go one direction, you turn around, you come right back. So hundreds and hundreds of passes. That's a lot of area to cover. That's a lot of opportunity, though, as well. You know, that's opportunity to be more precise. That's opportunity to collect data. So where GPS really started was really that opportunity to collect data. And most of it started with data about the harvest. Farmers have always been curious about how much crop they produce. Really, one of their primary goals is to produce a high volume of quality crop, whether that's wheat or corn or soy or really any crop. They want to know how good of a job did they do. And they measure that in, you know, how many pounds per acre, bushels per acre they produce. So what GPS allowed farmers to do was to measure that output and then GPS tag it so that they could look at a map. We could make a map of what parts of the field performed really well and what parts of the field performed really poorly. And that was super important because that allowed farmers to really, you know, reflect on what they did and what helped contribute to the success or failure of a certain portion of the field. And that allows farmers to get much more specific in how they fertilize, how they manage the soil, how they protect the crop on more of an acre by acre. And ultimately, we're getting to the point where it's plant by plant. So measuring that output, quantifying, you know, how well that field did was a thing that really was very hard to do before GPS and some of that initial technology that came out. But really, that was just the beginning. GPS really, you know, kind of took off and flourished from there. There was many other use cases. You know, another example is automatically knowing when to turn on and turn off an implement. So as we go out and we plant seeds or we fertilize the crop or we protect the crop with pesticides, those are very expensive products for a customer, and over applying them can be a waste. It can be hard on the plants, and financially it's a problem for the farmer as well. So really one of the next use cases for GPS was automatically controlling the implement to reduce over application. And this really helped save, probably at this point, hundreds of thousands, millions of gallons of fertilizer, pesticide that would have otherwise been wasted through over-application. So we call that technology implement control or section control. And then probably the last good example I'll give you, at least for GPS, was that ultimately that became a tool that's used to actually control the steering of the machine. So today I described the thousands and thousands of passes, you know, you need to make to cover 1,000 acres, just basically down and back all day long in the field. Well, as you can imagine, if you're driving back and forth all day long, if you're not super precise, say you are a foot off or 6 inches off in your steering, well, 6 inches or a foot times 1,000 passes, that can be a significant amount of inefficiency and waste as well. So what we did with GPS is we used the GPS position to automatically steer the machine very precisely to, say, under an inch of accuracy. So that allows each pass to be perfectly placed, and it allows us to move much more efficiently across the field than, say, you know, manually driving. Personally, you know, I'm not that good at driving straight across the field, so I'm very imprecise, but when I turn that system on, it's perfect. So we can make every operator very precise. So those are just a few of the things that GPS has done over the years, but all of them big time impact on efficiency for the farmer.
Those are terrific examples. We talk a lot about driverless cars or autonomous cars. It appears that autonomous tractors have been around for a while then. Is that right?
Yeah, certainly. And I think the level of automation is important because we've certainly had what I think the automotive industry would consider level one type autonomous vehicles for quite some time now. But we're really progressing at this point towards the point of actually removing the operator from the cab. But yeah, we've definitely covered a lot of ground as far as automation already in farming.
In most technology. It is about the technical innovation at the same time. It's about the human dimension. Perhaps the technology is ready to not have anyone in the cab, but are farmers ready to give up their seat in the cab?
In my experience, farmers are very progressive. If they see a new tool or a new technology, and they truly believe it will work reliably and help them do more with less, they're not very hard to convince to adopt it. I think one of the things with agriculture, though, is getting the technology to a point where it can perform really reliably, because in farming, it's a matter of hours and days, weeks. You know, it's not like we're doing a lot of this work 365 days a year. You know, success or failure in farming comes down to 1 or 2 weeks in the spring, 1 or 2 months in the fall, where the farmer has the right weather window to plant the crop, you know, or harvest the crop. So trusting that a technology is going to be reliable and it's going to be something that they can count on and stake their business on is really a very high quality bar that has to be met, probably more so than a lot of other technical endeavors, especially with modern apps and services. So for farmers, they're very, very progressive about adopting new technologies, but those technologies have to be extremely robust and reliable. So getting them to that point is almost as much of a challenge as marketing them to the customer. So I think those two go hand in hand, but ultimately they're quite progressive.
I have some background in market research, and I used to do work with farmers. They were very precise, highly scientific, and driven by reason. So it doesn't surprise me one bit that they are technophiles. They really like being progressive and using technology. Has technology advanced these days to the point where someone can sit at a computer terminal or perhaps even a mobile app and program the tractor and just sit back and watch?
I'd say we're very, very close, but I would more describe it as multitasking more than just programming it and watching, because these farmers are always very engaged and there's a lot of stuff happening at one time. So we're definitely progressing to that point where you can kind of sit back and watch. But right now it's really more of a mixed environment where farmers are on the go, monitoring, controlling, doing things remotely, but they're still very actively engaged. They're not, you know, passively watching at this point yet.
When we think about technology in farming, it seems to me we can go really big, or you could have small robots that are doing very precise, discrete functions. Can you tell us something about robots that are used widely in farms these days?
Yeah, I think, you know, you just kind of hit on it. One of the big questions in the industry is size. A lot of this comes back to the job to be done. So, you know, if we're trying to prepare the soil for planting and in a given region, you need to turn over the soil, There's an amount of power required, an amount of tractive effort. It's really a physics problem. So depending on how much work the farmer has to be done, the characteristics of the work, it kind of dictates the machine size a little bit. I think there'll be some new optimization that maybe changes the machine form, the machine size a little bit. But for us, it's really about building the technology that gets the job done to a high degree of quality and with maximum productivity, and then adapting that to the best suited machine for the task.
Can you give us any examples of machine-to-machine communication and a coordinated effort and a group of machines that work together on a farm by themselves autonomously?
Oh, sure. Let me start with some examples of more, I'd say, broadly used machine-to-machine communication. You know, one example is machines, you know, actively share records of their work. What I mean by that is, imagine you have two planters in a field planting. Those planters will actively communicate with each other to share where they've been and where they haven't been, so that when they pass over certain areas in the field, they don't accidentally plant twice. Same with sprayers. They'll actively communicate so that they can eliminate the possibility of over-application. So that's an example that is actually quite common in the industry today, where machines in real time are communicating with each other to do a better, higher quality job, whether mm-hmm. that's planting or spraying, et cetera. Another example of that, which we've, you know, demonstrated really successfully with our OmniDrive platform, where you actually have a combine and a grain cart coordinating their speed and steering. So when you're harvesting crop, one of the more complex operations is actually passing the harvested crop to a cart, you know, to take that away from the field. So as a combine is harvesting, it's carrying, you know, up to 450 bushels of, say, corn on it at a time. So as it fills up, it then has to dump that into a machine. And when you're doing that, you're actually in very close quarters. So making sure that the machines don't collide, making sure that the speed is matched perfectly so that you don't spill any crop on the ground and waste it. Those are all things that for operators to do, it's actually fairly challenging. So that's one thing where in our OmniDrive example, we actually took the grain cart operator out of the cab and showed that we can actually do that autonomously and coordinate that complex operation between a harvester with a human and a grain cart with no one in the operator seat. So that's another great example of how these operations can be coordinated.
If one is in the market to buy a fancy combine with all the bells and whistles and an autonomous package, you know, like the one that Tesla drops, how much would it cost?
You know, it depends on the size and the value and a lot of other factors there. But I mean, we're in the neighborhood of several hundred thousand dollars, $500,000, something like that. So it's a pretty significant investment. But the amount of work that those machines get done for a customer is just tremendous. One of the things that those new machines do is they actually set themselves. So combines are actually kind of like a factory on wheels. So they actually, you know, cut the crop, they bring in the crop, they separate the valuable part like the corn from the leaves and the cob. And doing that is actually a very complex process that has many different parts of the combine that historically you had to be a very skilled operator to know how to set each of those parts of that factory very precisely. And that could change based on, you know, the mass of the crop, the moisture of the crop, the humidity. Lots of complex factors can affect what the optimal settings for that machine were. So one of the new technologies that we would call combine automation, that allows the machine to actually, you know, learn the conditions and then self-optimize so that the farmer just tells the machine, do you want optimum grain quality? Do you want maximum productivity? And then the machine knows what to do so that the farmer doesn't have to think about it. So that's a great example where we can actually get higher grain quality, more productivity through automation, which is fantastic. But certainly the goal is to be able to get as much work done with as minimal, you know, labor as we can, because that's one of the hard realities in farming is that there's less and less labor to do the work and there's more and more work to do. So we try to, you know, make this equipment as productive as possible. So, you know, one farm owner and a couple of helpers can get a significant amount of work done. And in a lot of cases, that's true. And they can do definitely an impressive amount of work with some modern equipment.
You mentioned you're from the Midwest, and there is a very narrow window to get crops planted. Sometimes it's called the 7 perfect days. Can you tell us about that?
I like to say 7. Some people it's 5. It really just depends on how high a quality you're really pushing for. But there's a very narrow window where you really want to get all of your crops planted. The soil is right. The soil's the right temperature, the right moisture. You don't have rain in the forecast. If you plant it too early, there's additional risk of failure. If you plant it too late, you're probably not going to get the maximum yield potential. So for every customer, that's really one of the sacred times of the year is when it's time to plant, you have to go plant. And there's very little tolerance for downtime. Downtime could be caused by weather. It could be caused by labor. It could be caused by, you know, malfunctions. So a lot of care goes into preparing for that spring season because that time window is just so precious. You don't get a second opportunity. So we want to get as much productive output from that crop as possible. So getting it on that ideal day planted is huge. And for every application, it's a similar story. You know, you really want to protect the crop right in the right window. But additionally, harvesting is super important too. If you wait too long, you start to lose crops. So farmers are really, really time driven because there's only so many perfect days to get the job done.
Would ag tech, let's say it comes to its full, reaches full potential, what is the impact or the dynamic it would have on employment?
There's a strong precedent for this because we've been through this kind of mechanization evolution for almost 200 years now, where, you know, it used to be that every crop was harvested through the manual labor of people and animals. And as technology evolves, we gradually become more and more efficient. I think there's so much work to do on a farm that redeploying, you know, skilled farm laborers is a big opportunity, frankly. Diversifying the operation, reinvesting the time, you know, rather than, you know, sitting in a tractor cab, for example, you could, you know, tend to livestock or other tasks that are not yet optimized. So I think the opportunity is that we reinvest a lot of that human capital and in other jobs on the farm that can just make farms even more productive. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a story that is yet to be written, but is very exciting for the potential productivity gains and efficiency gains that this whole ag tech space, especially the automation space, has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a very difficult job, people stooping down and picking berries from morning till evening. That's not a job that people would want to do. So finding some, you know, technology-based solutions seems ideal. I also read somewhere that picking strawberries is a wicked AI problem. First, because the berries are hidden behind leaves, so computer vision cannot quite nail it. And berries also come in clusters, and it's very difficult for robotic arms to identify the right berry to pick at the right time. Berries are, you know, lost or missed or destroyed when they are picked. And this is fascinating, the kind of work that's going on. You probably know a lot more about this than I do, that there are these suction cups, and then there are these grippers with soft handles. But it seems that is still a bit of a final frontier that has not been overcome by AI at this point. Is that right?
I think that's one of the most exciting reasons to be in ag tech or precision ag, is that these are some really wicked problems that are super exciting to solve. I mean, these are complex challenges. There's very few problems in agriculture that I would call simple. In a lot of cases, like you just described, these are things that even as a human, it's hard. You know, it's hard to tell when a fruit is ripe, even as a human, let alone as an AI system that we have to design. It's really hard to model the weather and the soil and some of these key inputs to the farming life cycle. So whether it's mechanical, mechatronics, AI, big data, you name it, the challenges that we have in front of us to double, triple our food production with less inputs, like, they're super compelling, but they're very exciting to work on. It's a great space that we're seeing, you know, evolve at a pretty quick clip, and it's exciting to see where it's going to go for sure. I would love to have a robotically picked strawberry right now.
You spend a lot of time talking to customers, trying to understand what is the next big technology that would make their lives easy as farmers. What are you hearing from them?
You know, probably one of the most common themes is labor shortages. Farming requires a significant amount of labor, and just like really every industry, finding skilled labor is extremely short. You know, the job market is tight, unemployment is low. So finding people that are qualified to operate this heavy equipment is actually quite difficult. You know, there are a lot of challenges in agriculture, but I'd say one of the most consistent themes is finding skilled labor. You know, that's one of the reasons why you hear so much about automation and autonomy. How can we do more work with the labor we have, whether that's making an operator in a tractor or a combine more efficient, or making a machine, you know, autonomous to get work done on its own? Both of those are solutions to the skilled labor problem, which is pretty severe, you know, all around the world. So despite trying to feed an ever-growing population, there's a shortage of farmers around the world to do the work.
Right. But you know what is my on my wish list for Christmas? I would like a robot that drives away geese from my backyard. They are making such a mess. So just have a little bit of machine vision, figure out where there is a goose in the backyard. Usually it's not a goose. It's just like 20 geese creating a ruckus. So if we could have a robot that just scares the bejeepers out of them, that would be great.
Oh, I don't know if you have a like real-time fact checkers or anything, but I'm pretty sure there's a startup that's doing that if you Googled it. Because that's actually a very big problem in agriculture, especially for like horticultural crops or fruits and vegetables, is geese and birds and all that sort of thing can be very, very damaging. And you can only have so many farm dogs to keep them away. So I'm pretty sure there are some companies working on that. So you might get your Christmas wish.
Oh, thank you. That would be terrific. But Brett, thank you so much for joining us on Life Meet Tech. It's been a wonderful conversation. You've given us a bunch of insights about agriculture, precision agriculture, and how technology plays a key role in the food that we, you know, get to enjoy at our tables that we find at the grocery store. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be a part of it. I'm excited to listen to it, and it's been an awesome experience. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett.
Awesome. Thank you.
See ya.
All right, bye.
Life Meet Tech is presented by WKAR in association with Michigan State University. Executive producer, Melanie Paul. Audio engineer, Drew Hill. And hosted by me, Prabhu David. Please subscribe wherever you're listening right now so you don't miss an episode. And I'll see you next time on Life Meet Tech.